This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
You know, I got to give the big guy credit here as we welcome you back here on Sharp Money. I'm Patrick Maher, of course, Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson at the D Bar Canada, where Derek Stevens and the crew, Circus Sports, were kind enough to build us a beautiful studio there. Outside of the beautiful studio over at Circus Sports, which is the best in the business, we should say. I just got to give the big guy credit quickly because he texted me maybe it was a couple days ago. He said, I think I have a great segment set up for Palm and Shaw because, of course, they used to do a show together, RIP, here on VSIN, and it was a debate show. I liked the way it was set up. They kind of looked at each other and debated. So we're going to go a little back to old school, Mike Palm, and have you two debate Palm versus the Prince, debate eight topics coming up in the next segment.
It'll be like the old CNN crossfire with Pat Buchanan and Tom Brady. I mean, we're going to recall those days. I've prepared to argue both sides of the issue and the binary ones. The ones that are not binary, I have no idea where Amal's going to come, so I might struggle there.
By the way, a little bit more current political in Dustin's realm would have been Hannity and Combs.
I was thinking Ronnie versus Sammy on Jersey Shore. That would have made more sense for me.
I think so. And then, big guy, you and I will each keep a scorecard.
Yep.
Okay. And then, so that is yet to come. Mike, I know tough day for you as you join us here on Sharp Money because you're missing out on a town hall meeting at VSIN. I know that hurts.
I thought you meant because my Astros American League and Phillies World Series futures went up in flames.
Oh, no. Did you really? Did they go up in? Oh, my gosh. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, I do monetize, but I didn't do so with a correct ratio. If it goes Phillies, Astros, Phillies, I went about 33,000 them all. Oh. I picked up less than six on the monetization. So I'm pretty bummed out. Both teams going home up 3-2. It's a pretty tough spot there. So it's really depressing. And to add on to that, I had under 21.5 live in the first half of the Vikings game. Why are they doing zero blitz with 16 seconds left in Minnesota not having a timeout? Tackle anybody in the field to play deep zone, play anything. They can't get another playoff. Cousins isn't getting down there in 6 seconds and spiking the ball. What was that defensive call? I mean, just ludicrous. Forget that he had it and the receiver pulled it away from him. Why would you go with a zero blitz package in that spot? What does it do you to sack Cousins so the half ends? Ridiculous.
Did you text? I guarantee you texted our good buddy Michael Lombardi that same question while it was happening in real time. Did you?
I don't bother him during games. He's that's his livelihood.
He's too dialed in.
I have a segment about once a month I'm on now on Thursdays that he's on, and I asked him the pressing three. So I'm going to ask him about that. Why aren't they getting more criticism for that? And I don't know why Sirianni wasn't getting more criticism for throwing the ball out of the 2 minute warning, and the Eagles lost to the Jets. Oh. I mean, why wouldn't you run the ball there? I mean, they should be undefeated.
Patrick and I talked about Brian Daboll. Oh, we talked about and then Nick Sirianni and who was on the other side there. Some of the decisions you saw that weekend were terrible.
Even though it was the coaching decisions, I think no hyperbole will all be officiating decisions this week. The officiating was horrific. Horrific.
Well, you saw what happened in Indy.
Twice.
They came down and we're like, yeah, we botched it. Yeah, our bad.
Twice they missed calls there. Go ahead.
That one Harold Carmichael couldn't catch.
Yeah.
I mean, that ball was so high.
It hit the wall.
Exactly.
It hit the wall. The guy went down, hit his head. His head was barely in the paint. And it hit the wall. I mean, there are so many things. How about the fair catch in the Iowa game? I know that might have cost you a few shekels of all.
Oh, my God. Oh. Don't even get me started.
Wait a minute.
I'd like to hear both your take on that.
If the punt returner's doing this, is that a fair catch signal, an illegal fair catch signal? If he's telling all his guys stay away from the ball, which they often do.
No, that's telling his boys to stay away.
So with one hand, he points to a block, and with the other hand, he does this. How is that an invalid? It never even got to his shoulder, let above his head. And they went back to review the out of bounds, and now all of a sudden they see an invalid fair catch signal? This is like, this is like if they went back to review that and they saw an illegal block and called it back. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's a horrific call and a horrific use of replay, Amal.
Yeah. See, Patrick, my issue wasn't the call per se. Mm-hmm. It was the fact that replay changed the call. If it was made on the field, I would have lived with it. But the fact that they were going to review an out of bounds and then you decide to implement that. And here's the other thing. I went back and watched the play again 2 days ago just to punish myself. you look at the Gophers. They were all reacting like it was a live play situation. It wasn't like everyone pulled up and said, oh, my gosh, we got caught by surprise. P.J. Fleck's reaction told you everything.
22 players, P.J. Fleck, and eight officials didn't think that was an invalid fair catch.
Yeah, so arbitrary. Yeah, that was shocking, to say the least. This snakes and this World Series, is this exciting? I know you're pissed off because you got a little bit out of it, but you had a future setup that was going to be awesome. But do you care about this series?
Oh, sure, because I love baseball. So how could you not care about the series? Look, I mean, I tweeted this last night. People want to dissect the last two games in Philadelphia. They want to talk about Castellanos. You can't blow game four.
Yep.
You can't blow that game. Let Kimbrough. That's how you lost the series. But look, they just weren't good enough. They weren't good enough to hit Ginkle. They weren't good enough to hit Sewald. They, you know, Turner, Harper. They didn't get hits in the big spots. Arizona did. Arizona was better. So give it to them. I mean, and I think it's interesting. I like that, you know, you've got some good starting pitching matchups here. Bochy never loses now. I mean, he pushes all the right buttons. I'm out, but I will still enjoy watching the World Series.
Patrick, to follow up, and I know you and I have talked about this, but I don't know where Mike comes out. Why the hell is Craig Kimbrough treated like he's Mariano Rivera in this postseason, trotting him out there? He gives up three runs in that eighth inning. It was a 5-3 lead for the Phillies. They should have put the Diamondbacks away. I think if the Diamondbacks end up winning the World Series, you'll point back to game four, the eighth inning, is what propelled them.
And why doesn't he pull him after the home run when it was still tied? He leaves him in there to give up another run. But Kimbrough should know. I mean, Alvarado's the best pitcher in the bullpen. You got five guys that could come in and throw 96. You could have used Kimbrough sparingly, but that's a lot of hindsight. So, you know, it is. It's not sour grapes for me. I said that the Astros and Rangers would go seven. I never thought it wouldn't. It did. I mean, Baker runs out of starting pitching. I mean, Javier even get an out in games. I mean,
one out.
Scherzer, I thought Scherzer would react when Bochy came out in the third inning or whatever to take. He did not. He handed him the ball. That must have been the game plan. He said, when you're going to get in a high leverage spot, huge for Scherzer. They got him a lead and he didn't have to pitch from behind. It makes it much different. So give credit to these teams that made it. They earned it.
What would you price it out? What would you price the series out? Not what it is. What would the palm price be?
Texas 145 to 150, because Arizona's playing very well right now.
Patrick and I said about 130 to 135.
Fod.
Yeah, I mean, 170 seems steep. No?
It's too steep with Fod pitching as well as the other two. So now you have three very good starting pitchers. If Fod stays in form, makes it a much more even series than what the price is.
We are going to, as a show, try to take some of Circa's money with our $1,000 free roll from your boy, Bill A.D. The mysterious man gave us $1,000 and we went 40-1 on the Bengals. I bring that up, Mike Palm, because it looks like Purdy is out Sunday versus the Bengals. So Brock Purdy, concussion protocol, may not start. Looks like he's not going to start this Sunday.
Yeah, and it's interesting now where you rank San Francisco just two and a half weeks removed from the crushing victory over the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. I fully excuse the loss at Cleveland, the weather, the injuries, the rain, wind. Hard to excuse Minnesota to me on Monday night.
I would agree with you. And here's the thing. Jake Moody misses a 43-yard field goal. We're not even having the conversation if he makes the field goal. I mean, that's just unfortunately one right leg miss and that was it. But you're right. I thought they should have beaten the Vikings. They didn't play particularly well. Patrick, we talked about it on Tuesday. Minnesota for 60 minutes was clearly the better team. If you took the names off the jerseys and the colors, you would have thought Minnesota's the team that's the favorite to win the NFC.
Particularly defensively. I don't think they played well defensively at all Monday night.
No, I totally and can't use injuries. Nope. Minnesota's running around without Justin Jefferson. Yeah. So you can't sit there and point to the 49er injuries. It makes for an exciting season. Look, we bet it at 40-1 with our Bengals, Mike Palm, and it's now down to 25-1. So we will take it. What else? What else can we do
a little Survivor, Patrick. And
What is it? 12:37 left?
Yeah, 552 out, 194 on the Bills, 101 on the Bucks, 99 on the Rams, 47 on the 49ers, 45 on the Raiders, 42 on the Saints, 12 on the Commanders, 9 on the Packers, 307 of the 552 that eliminated on road teams them all. Let's take a look at this week now. Implied value of your tickets, just about 7,500, 74.91. Here's your choices of teams that are more than a touchdown favorite. Buffalo at home to Tampa Bay is tonight, 8.5, but only 200 entries out of the 1,300 have Buffalo, the 1,237 have Buffalo. Dolphins, 9.5 against Pats, but only 215 have Dolphins. I think the most popular pick will come down to Baltimore and Arizona because, look, it's hard to use Baltimore in division. That division is so tough, they beat each other up. 636 have Baltimore left. But probably the most popular will be the Chargers because where else are you going to use them? 8.5 against the Bears. 1,082 out of 1,237 have the Chargers left on Sunday night.
I'm in a separate survivor pool. Uh-huh. And the week I got bounced with Jacksonville, I used Kansas City in that one against the Bears. And I used the Chargers this week.
Yeah.
I think I've already used up Miami and some of these other teams. And I think, Patrick, you have to. Now, Adam made a good point yesterday. There's not a lot of great spots for Baltimore moving forward. However, I would counter with this. I'd rather have a quality team like Baltimore left on the back end against a team like the Rams at home or somebody else. You'll still take your chances. You feel comfortable with them. My only objection to Buffalo, I don't know where you guys come out on this. It's a Thursday night game. I don't like the quick turnarounds. I'm not saying that Tampa's going to go up to Orchard Park and win the football game. But to me, the short weeks always tend to be a little bit more precarious in terms of how teams play, regardless at home or away.
Speaking of Survivor, Mike Palm, I'm bitter because I just had a goal taken away from me. PSG Milan. Are you kidding? Now, how about Celtic up 2-1 on Atletico Madrid? Did you do anything Champions League?
No, can't look at it. I'm not looking at it.
What?
No, because of this. I need a rest from the betting after this much of a disappointment. Seriously, this is part of the psychology of the better, though. I barely even looked at the game. I saw that they're having a tough time in Ireland, but, you know, Diego Simeone.
Wait, you're saying because of the baseball?
You can't give up two goals to Celtic.
To Celtic?
No.
I mean, come on, Diego.
Come on, Diego.
That team never gives up goals.
No.
Decompressing. Will that affect his performance in Palm versus the Prince next?
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, I'll make this quick. We've got Palm versus the Prince. Sign up right now at VSIN.com/subscribe. $120 through May 1st. You get everything, including the college basketball betting guide, which dropped this week. It's amazing. You got to check out the betting guide because we do a lot of the work for you. Busy college basketball season coming. VSIN.com/subscribe. Okay, we're back. Amal Shaw, I'm Patrick Maher, of course. Dustin Sweetelson, Mike Palm, VP of Ops there, Circa the D Golden Gate. VSIN host at Mike Palm Circa. And it's time for the debut of Palm versus the Prince. We will debate, Palm and the Prince will debate and we will judge. We will grade. Okay, let's start it up. And we're going to start with you, Amal Shaw. Who will be the first coach fired in the NFL?
Frank Reich, Carolina Panthers. David Tepper's the owner there, former hedge fund guy. Very short patience, short leash. And I think the way this team has performed, it's not that we're expected to make the postseason, but they're in a bad division with no quarterback play. I think this is going to be a potential change coming here. And remember the comments, Patrick, we talked about? He goes, well, you know, I don't really like to talk to the owner. Along those lines, I just think it's a bad situation right now in Carolina.
I disagree, Amal. I'm going to say Brandon Staley with the Los Angeles Chargers. I'm going to say because of expectations, all right? And you mentioned expectations. I get that Tepper has a shorter string here. But what has Staley done with Justin Herbert other than waste his career? 21-20 with Herbert, no playoff wins. Anthony Lynn had a better record and won a playoff game with the Chargers. This guy is brought in as a defensive genius, and his defenses cannot contain teams. They blow leads every week, and his fourth down decision-making and game management are second to none, is the worst in the league.
Spanoses are too cheap to eat the contract of Brandon Staley.
Ooh, a retort. That is a first ever, Palm versus the Prince, although it was the first question ever. All right, next question. Over, under. We're going to set the total at 8.5 teams, Mike Palm, that can win the Super Bowl this year.
Way under. I've got 5. On my list, San Francisco, Philadelphia, Kansas City, Baltimore, and Cincinnati. The ifs, if I give you the ifs, Cleveland, Miami, Detroit. That's ifs, iffy range, fringe element to me. I don't think it's close. I wouldn't include anybody else on that list. Amal, if you can find 9, I'll give you credit.
I don't have 9. I've got 8. I've got the 5 you have, uh-huh. And I've got 2 of the 3 that you mentioned. mentioned it, Philadelphia, San Francisco. I think we're in complete agreement there, all of us here on the set. And then you go to the AFC, Kansas City, of course. Let's go to the AFC East very quickly. I think if Buffalo and Miami play their A games, they're capable of beating anybody. For Miami, it's got to be perfect weather conditions, potentially home games in South Florida. If you have to go on the road, whether it's in any weather or else, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Kansas City, or Buffalo, it could be a real challenge because of the weather. I still think Buffalo is very capable, even though they haven't been consistent. And then on the flip side, I would throw in the AFC North, Baltimore, Cincinnati. Guys, I'm going to throw in Cleveland because of the fact that Jerome Ford's done a nice job at the tailback position. I know Deshaun Watson's been a train wreck. If you think about it from this perspective, this team has gotten nothing out of Deshaun Watson. If there isn't somewhat of an elevation in his performance along the way, I think that just absolutely propels this team. The defense, in my opinion, right now is not elite. It's the best defense in the National Football League. I know they gave up 38 points on Sunday. You have outliers. You have bad games. I don't believe the Detroit Lions can win the Super Bowl. I think they're a team that potentially could get there. Dustin was very specific in win. I'm going to go with the under on 8 here.
Okay. If the rumors are proven true, Amal Shaw, you're up. Should Michigan get the death penalty?
No, the death penalty is not in line with what's transpired here. I think there should be some sort of punishment here that fits the crime. You know, maybe a postseason bowl ban. Because the one thing you look at, Michigan's record, since this alleged incident happened, starting in the 2021 season, Michigan has been rolling 33-3 since that point in time. Obviously bodes well for what the Wolverines have been able to do. And you look at the teams that they've been scouting. Georgia, some of the other opponents that you could face off in the college football playoff, Ohio State among TCU as well. So I think there has to be some severity to it if you want to send a message. And here's the thing. I'm not saying this is a justification for the punishment, but you should really punish Harbaugh and have him wind up with a 3-year show cause. Let him go to the National Football League. Let Michigan wash their hands of him. And then don't punish the program at that level because of what the coach did.
Well, the question is kind of ludicrous to me. I mean, do you think it's unethical for someone to watch another team play?
No.
Do you think the NCAA is consistent in its enforcement of policies?
No, but I don't think most judges and juries are.
I think there's no moral high ground here at all to enforce this. I think it's ludicrous. A bunch of guys sitting in a room that even wrote this rule because ADs don't want to spend money sending people going and scouting. So they come up with this farcical rule. Let's call this what it is. They hate Jim Harbaugh. They're looking for a reason to get rid of Harbaugh. If they do something, it's probably going to be what Amal said, to try to drive Harbaugh out. But to punish the program, I think, is not reasonable.
Palm asking his opponent questions. That is unprecedented. Who is the best team, Mike Palm, in the Pac-12?
Well, I don't think this is close. I think it's the Oregon Ducks. Dan Lanning completely mismanaged that game at Husky Stadium. They're the better team defensively. It's probably second best defensive team in the conference to Utah. Utah does not have a quarterback and won't have a quarterback for the rest of the year. You could almost make the argument that right now Arizona is the second best team. I think this team is very dangerous. But to me, clearly, Oregon, the most balanced and best team in the Pac-12.
He took my answer, yep. Patrick. You guys know where I come out on this one. I'm hoping for a Ducks-Huskies rematch. Let's come in and unload the clip on Oregon. They're the better football team. I'm telling you right now, I bet this morning Bo Nix at 12-1 to win the Heisman. He is going to win the Heisman. I looked at his numbers. The biggest threat is not Michael Penix. The biggest threat is J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy, 18 touchdowns, 3 INTs, all 3 against Bowling Green. Bo Nix has thrown 1 interception. This guy's been absolutely elite. I don't even understand because they didn't get 3 yards. We're not talking about Bo Nix. He's been the best player, the most outstanding player in college football this year. I agree with Mike for almost everything he said. Bryson Barnes is a better quarterback than he gets credit for Utah. It's always tough going on the road to Rice Eccles, but a road win here by Oregon, and if Bo Nix throws for 250 and 2 touchdowns, no turnovers, I think he's got to be in that conversation with J.J. McCarthy and Michael Penix.
Amal Shaw, who would you rather have lead your program, James Franklin or Lincoln Riley?
I'd rather just have the prisoners running the asylum. I mean, neither of these guys, but I'll go with Lincoln Riley for the purpose of this question. James Franklin has proven he can't win the big game. Look at his record against Ohio State and Michigan. This guy has continuously struggled. He's been 1-10 now against AP top 5 teams during his tenure. He's just not a guy that can get it done. You know what? We exactly knew. Remember when the Penn State season win total was set at 9.5, guys, before the season started, Patrick? We talked about this in August. They're going to win 10 games. They're going to lose to Ohio State. They're going to lose to Michigan. They look non-competitive against the Buckeyes only because Ohio State arguably has their worst or most inept offense in years. They still have a very good defense in State College. The offensive line, the running game did not show out the way it was anticipated this year. Lots of work to be done. Lincoln's had some success, at least. He's gotten to the college football playoff. He just doesn't believe in playing defense. He thinks it's like when you're a kid, it's make it, take it, and you keep the ball.
I agree with Amal Shaw. James Franklin can't win the game to get you to the game. Lincoln loses. Lincoln's 72-15. He's only lost 5 games by double digits. 3 straight playoff appearances at Oklahoma. Remember the double overtime loss in the Rose Bowl to Georgia? Yep. They get beat by Alabama in the Orange Bowl 45-34. LSU did dominate them in the Peach Bowl that year, but they dominated Clemson in the championship game. Close loss at Utah. Then they got pounded by Utah. 5 turnovers, Notre Dame. He's going to keep you in every game. His offense is going to perform. Franklin just can't do it against any kind of competition that is near his level.
First of all, just on
this. Is Kirk Cousins, quickly, Mike Palm, is Kirk Cousins top 10 quarterback?
QBR says he's 12th. Let's try to argue. Amal, let's debate this together. Would you concede that Mahomes, Allen, Tua, Goff, Herbert, Lamar, and Hurts are all better than him?
Yes.
Okay, now here's the question. Is Purdy better than him?
No.
Is Prescott better than him?
No.
Is Geno better than him?
No.
Is Lawrence better than him?
Yes.
Is Stafford better than him?
Yes.
Is CJ Stroud better than him?
Can't put that yet. Doesn't have enough body of work.
All right, then he's top 10.
I don't disagree with this. I think he is top 10. I actually, Patrick, look, my criticism of Kirk Cousins comes from the contract that he was given based on performance, and he didn't warrant it at that point in time. But when you look at his consistency and what Justin Jefferson's been able to do during his tenure in Minnesota, a lot of that credit has to go to Kirk Cousins along the way. There's other quarterbacks with elite receivers that are not putting up comparable stats.
Okay. Amal Shaw, this is the last question. What's the best candy you can get trick-or-treating?
Reese's Pieces or peanut M&Ms. I'm sorry, I'm going to. I apologize.
Okay.
Okay. Mike? He'll take peanut M&Ms. I'll take Reese's Pieces. A lot of people have allergies to nuts. I think that discounts a lot of the country for a mall. I think my answer appeals to a broader audience. Let me ask you this. I want to go back. It's over, yeah, but I want to go back because we agreed on the under 8.5. I have Miami there. You have Buffalo. Buffalo couldn't do it when they were 13 seconds away with a superior team against Kansas City with a superior team than they had now. Buffalo couldn't get it done at home against Cincinnati with a team that's better than the one they have now. I don't have any faith that Buffalo can win the Super Bowl this year.
I don't disagree with you. I still think the talent is there, though, when you've got a number one quarterback and a number one receiver. The one thing that I would point with Buffalo is that I look at the AFC minus Kansas City. I don't think any team is better than they were in the past. I think the Cincinnati team is worse than they were. I think Baltimore's solid, but not as good as what
I think Baltimore's better. And I think Baltimore, what we saw against Detroit was something pretty amazing, that healthy Baltimore team. I understand against the NFC and you haven't prepared for Lamar, it's very difficult, but they look like they were playing a JUCO team out there on Sunday. And Detroit's a very good team.
Inaugural Palm versus Prince, Dustin Sweetelson, the grading. I had it 3-3 with one push. The push was on death penalty Michigan.
I also have it 3-3 with one push. Amal didn't even pick the best M&M product, and Mike didn't even pick the best Reese's product. It's a tie for me.
I never tried the peanut butter M&Ms.
I meant to Mike bring Palm. Them for you, but I ate them.
Great job. Head up to the meeting there, Legacy Club.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, check out the betting splits, one of the tools over at VSIN.com. Money and bets for every game, updated every 5 minutes straight from DraftKings. Today's games and future events as well. Make sure you check out the betting splits, VSIN.com. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. This is Sharp Money, VSIN, the sports betting network. Our next guest, he was all over my TV this weekend, does a great job. ESPN college football analyst, Trevor Maddich, of course, BYU, NFL, does a great job on TV. Halftime tonight, UTEP, Sam Houston State. Tomorrow, Syracuse, Virginia Tech, and then College Game Day on ESPN Radio Saturday, noon to 3 Eastern. Enjoy. Love watching you on TV, Trevor. Thank you for the time. And I'll start here. James Franklin, after the loss to Ohio State, said he's not sure those weren't the two best teams in the country playing, or I'm paraphrasing. Do you agree with Mr. Franklin?
I agree with half of it, Patrick. I think Ohio State's one of the best teams in the country. I think Penn State's one of the best defenses in the country, but their offense kind of got exposed, didn't it? I mean, their offensive line going up against an elite defensive front seven of the Buckeyes wasn't able to make a lot of holes. And this is a defense, or excuse me, an offense for Penn State that doesn't get a lot of big plays anyhow, running or passing. I mean, for all the love that Penn State quarterback Drew Aller gets, he doesn't push the ball down the field. And I don't know if that's because he can't or because they're just not asking him to. But against the Buckeyes, he needed to. and nothing happened in that game either. He also looks really, really slow, both in the way he moves and in his decision makings against the Buckeyes. And again, that might be the best defense in the country, Ohio State. But at the same time, I can't say that Penn State is a top five or six team, seven team, when their offense has not been able to show that even against bad teams, it can light them up.
Trevor, Michigan has looked outstanding against weaker competition, so I don't know where you come out on them in terms of how you see their performance, but Georgia now loses Brock Bowers, and they haven't played anyone either. How much of an impact could that have in the cocktail party this weekend without Brock Bowers going up against a Florida team that seems to be coming on?
Yeah, Amal, that's a really good question, because you get into a debate between who deserves it the most based on resume and who's good enough. I mean, you could have taken Georgia, you know, out of the SEC the last 2 years and dropped them into the MAC, the Mid-America Conference, right, with Kent State and Northern Illinois, and they still would have been the best team in the country both years. But they might not have made the playoffs because people would say, well, they didn't deserve it because of resume. And I think that when you look at this Georgia team now, they are getting a lot more shade than they should. Statistically, they're in the top seven in both offense and defense at yards gained and yards allowed, points scored and points allowed. They're in the top seven in both of those. So they're showing great balance overall. Bowers is a problem because when they've needed a big play, it's gone to him. And the wide receiver room for Georgia coming into this season on paper looked like the deepest group that they've had there in a number of years because they brought in Missouri's best wide receiver from the year before in the transfer portal, Dominic Lovett. Mississippi State's best receiver from the year before, Ra-Ra Thomas. They had Ladd McConkey, right? Then they had some others, too. And those guys now need to step up. McConkey's been hurt, and he's rounding his way back into shape. But Lovett and Thomas need to now become the playmakers that will replace the production of Brock Bowers because it's been like they've been complementary pieces, and they knew it. Until Bowers got hurt. So that will be the key for Georgia. Will they get playmaking from the wide receivers in a way that they didn't get from that group when Bowers was fully healthy? And if they do, then Georgia, they're one of the best two or three teams in the country, and they're very, very balanced. Not as spectacular and flashy as they've been the last couple of years, especially on the defensive line, which is where they really have had their big advantage in the two national championships. But they're still plenty good enough everyone across the board to compete for the best for the top.
ESPN college football analyst Trevor Maddich joining us here, Sharp Money. So we've been having the debate. You talked about flashy, that Husky Stadium game between Washington, Trevor, and of course, Oregon was flashy. How do you separate the two? Who do you have as the better team? Obviously, Washington the winner, but that was a tight one.
Yeah, Washington won the game. And because of that, as a player, it would gall me if everything else is fairly equal to drop the winner below the team that beat them head to head. Right. And Fair. So if I were to rank them right now, I've got Washington one ahead of Oregon. However, looking at those two teams, I think Oregon is the better team. Washington's passing game is fantastic. Their running game is pedestrian and their defense has shown some weaknesses, especially in giving up passes. The thing about Oregon is that they've had some injuries in the secondary, but even with that, they've been pretty balanced all the way across the board on both sides of the ball in a way that Washington has not shown. Plus, when you look at Washington against Arizona State last week, Arizona State did a masterful job of building on what Arizona did to slow down the Washington offense a few weeks before. Arizona knew that Washington wants to go vertical. And so they dropped everybody back and forced Washington to dink and dunk it down the field. And Washington won that game, but they only scored 31 points, which up to that point, I believe, was their lowest output of the season. And so here comes Arizona State last week to play at Washington. And they did a combination of what Arizona did, back everybody out, and mixed it with incredible aggression up at the line of scrimmage. And that kept Michael Penix Jr., the quarterback, off balance for Washington. And Washington, they only scored, 15 points or something? It was just a miserable outing for the Washington offense. And so that worries me a little bit. I think Oregon has a better balance in that if the passing attack is being taken away for one reason or another, Bucky Irving at running back is one of my favorite backs in the country. And they still have the ability to compensate for it in a way that Washington doesn't quite as well.
Love that breakdown. Trevor, let's stay on this theme a little bit here. In terms of the Heisman, you're previously a Heisman voter. How do you stack the players right now, and who would you have as your top three right now?
Yeah, right now it's kind of tough because Michael Penix Jr. had a bad game.
Yep.
I mean, a bad game against a team that he shouldn't have had, a bad game against Arizona State, right? And then Caleb Williams of USC has had a couple, you know, games in a row that are questionable against Notre Dame. He was miserable. He was just terrible. And against Utah, he was pretty good, but he wasn't Heisman worthy, in my opinion. And so, you know, those two guys would have been the top two, and they kind of dropped down a little bit. And so right now there is no clear front runner, in my opinion. I think the betting favorite, depending on what book you're looking at, is J.J. McCarthy, the Michigan quarterback. And when you watch him on tape, he is incredibly effective, incredibly efficient. He's decisive. He throws darts. His footwork is on point. Drop, set, throw. I mean, the guy knows exactly what he's doing, and he's getting it done physically. But when you watch their opponents, there's two things that stand out. One is that they look terrible by comparison to Michigan. And the other is the opponents look terrible just because a lot of them are actually super terrible. And so McCarthy, while he's playing well, has not had the stage set for him to have a big Heisman moment. Penix had that moment when he trailed Oregon late in the game, and two plays later, he throws a magnificent touchdown pass to Roma Dunze to win the game, right? You've got plays like that. Jordan Travis of Florida State, you know, they're playing at Clemson, and in overtime, he throws a magnificent touchdown pass, tight coverage, dropped a dime, and it was a laser. It was a combination of, you know, of accuracy and the fact that it was a laser right over the head of the defender in a huge moment on the road to win the game. McCarthy hasn't really had that. So if I were to pick three right now, I would still have Michael Penix Jr. I would have Jaden Daniels of LSU, and I would have Marvin Harrison Jr., receiver for Ohio State, in my top three.
Trevor, we've got 1 minute. I want one more question. The problem with USC football right now is fill in the blank.
Toughness. Really mental toughness. When things get bad, they tend to stay bad. You know, Utah beat them up along the offensive line and stopped everybody because of that. The receivers got beat up, and it seemed to affect them on tape. You know, the defense, I thought, was improving. You know, they were doing some things that gave me hope. And then Utah, with a backup quarterback and with a safety playing running back, just smashed them. And they didn't have an answer. They have the talent. The schemes are fine. But from a standpoint of mental toughness that combines how urgent you are focusing in practice, and when you get hit in the mouth during the game, you bear down and do the right things in the right way. Everybody, all 11, every time. That's where they seem to be lacking. I'm not saying they're soft as individuals. I'm saying as a team, there's a degree of mental toughness that translates into execution, and they lose that when they get hit in the mouth.
We'll be watching tonight. Trevor Maddich, of course, UTEP, San Houston State, of course, all weekend on ESPN, ESPN Radio as well. We love your work on ESPN, Trevor, and thank you for the time.
Thanks, Patrick. Thanks, Amal.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. He does a great job. I saw him this past weekend with Acho, Emmanuel. Is it Emmanuel Acho and somebody
Sam,
else,
Sam,
I believe it
Sam.
Was? Yeah,
yeah.
They just, Maddich has been good for years and years on television. Nice to talk to him. Speaking of years and years on TV, how about this? Chris Myers joins us next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Download the DraftKings app, bet $5, get $200 back in free bets right now when you use that promo code SHARP, S-H-A-R-P. Remember, no sweat, same game parlay every day at DraftKings. DraftKings, the crown is yours. Amal Shah, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. We're going to bring in legendary broadcaster, and I don't use that lightly, Chris Myers, NFL on Fox, covered everything, Super Bowl, Daytona 500, the Masters, World Series, you name it. Also, I grew up with the legendary Up Close show. That's probably why I got into broadcasting. I love that show. And I'm going to embarrass Chris because years and years ago, I was doing a little radio show, and he called up, and the phone screener at the time said, Chris Myers is calling and he just wants to talk about sports with you. And I said, you're lying. Chris Myers isn't randomly calling the show, but you did. And I'll always remember that act of kindness, Chris. Thank you.
Well, I was listening late at night. You were interesting. I think it had something to do with the Detroit Lions. I don't know, but I remember calling and I'm glad you're doing well. And it's good to be on with you and I'm off.
It's great to be on with you as well. And one of the stories you told us, so maybe you can tell a new audience, when you're wearing, you're always a Napoli attired, the scarf. Who gave you the scarf, Chris Myers?
I think it wasn't one of our wardrobe people. It was somebody, and I needed something because I'm a warm weather guy, and I was in a cold climate covering a game on a field, and they threw it on, and it became, hey, it was a bright blue or something, and you guys commented, and everybody was all over it on social media. So I don't really recall, but it was a big hit. So now I have to be much more aware of fashion in the right places.
Yeah, well, you've come to the right show for fashion. Who's good? You had the Eagles. You had the Eagles recently. We were just talking about the 49ers. We thought they were great. Then all of a sudden they go to Minnesota. Of course, back-to-back losses. Right now, if your power rankings, Chris, who do you have at the top?
Yeah, you know, I've shuffled on this, and I got to tell you, beginning of the year, I have the Eagles game coming up. I had the Bucs-Falcons recently. I started out with the 49ers, thinking that the loss of the offensive and defensive coordinators for the Eagles might catch up to them. But I've shifted. The Lions showed some vulnerability there. I know injuries are part of the game, but I would still have to put the Eagles back up at the top after what I saw against Miami, and they've dealt with their share of injuries. And they've got a front office when they need to do something. Hey, we need a receiver. Let's go trade for A.J. Brown. We need a DB. Let's pick up a two-time All-Pro Kevin Byard from Tennessee. Even though he's got some years on him, he can fit right in and help our team. So, and I think Jalen Hurts is really improving. And I wasn't sold on him as an NFL passer from the pocket. He needs to run to be effective, even in his own mind, I think. But he's got enough around him, and they do enough things, and they're very good defensively. So I'll put them up there. I'm still a believer in the 49ers and the Lions. That's the NFC. The AFC, I think you have to put the Chiefs first and put them first overall until somebody proves otherwise. Even though we keep waiting for, you know, the defense, they're not that great. Somebody they'll be able to outscore them. That just doesn't seem to happen.
Chris, I'm not being facetious when I say this. Desmond Ridder might be the most talked about player on our show since the regular season has started. And you've seen him in person. Give us your assessment, because we're all huge Arthur Smith fans here. So tell us how you see him playing into this team with the talent around him.
Well, I first ran into him out of college at a NASCAR event, believe it or not. He was there in Atlanta and got to talk to him in a kind of a relaxed environment. I was really impressed with the kind of guy that he is. So I can see why in a huddle around a team, he's likable, right? I mean, he works hard. I don't know, and I've heard this, and this is really the view of other defensive coordinators and players around the league. He's okay. He's not a great quarterback, but maybe that's all you need with what Arthur Smith does with the running game. And I had that game last week. He had three lost fumbles, and yet he made the big play against a very good Buccaneer defense to set him up for the field goal. So I don't think he's going to win a lot of games for you, but I don't think he'll lose many once he sorts out. And I got to say, Arthur Smith was very defensive in our production meeting. He was almost surly with me. I didn't even ask the question about, hey, are you considering benching him after the three interceptions? I asked him about Ridder and confidence, and he went into, hey, it's silly for anybody to ask if he's going to be benched. He's our guy. So he was obviously very defensive about that, and that's understandable because he likes his guy. So I think, you know, if you got everything else going well, you're going to be okay. But I don't see this guy, even though he's thrown for 300 yards in the two previous games before Tampa, I just don't see him, you know, going off the charts and winning a game that way. But he's very effective. He runs. He's learning. He's had 11 starts in the NFL. He runs the ball very well himself. He's not afraid to take hits. The big thing about Atlanta this year, their defense is so improved. They're one of the better defenses in the league.
Chris Myers, NFL on Fox. Immediately, you hear the voice, you know him. You've had the Saints twice some consternation. They were favorites in division coming into the season. Have you noticed something wrong when covering the Saints with that team right now?
Yeah, I have, and I wasn't buying it earlier. This is another, that whole division, you know, Carolina's a disappointment. You get a rookie head coach, rookie quarterback, but they're all strong defensively. Atlanta got better. The Saints have been there. Carolina has been good. They've kind of slipped a little, and the Bucs have improved their defense. As far as the Saints go, there's something missing, and I've always kind of liked Carr. You know, he had that tag of, you know, you can't really advance your team and take him into the playoffs. Dennis Allen, it was an immediate hookup because Allen drafted him when they were back in the Raiders. So when he was available, he said, I want to go with Dennis Allen and win. He joked, Derek Carr, I'm the guy who got him fired with the Raiders, which isn't true. But Dennis Allen is a defensive coach. There's some guys, they're better coordinators than they are head coaches. Maybe you can say that about Todd Bowles. There's some other guys that are play callers. This offense has too much talent to be out of sync. They're really dysfunctional. And Alvin Kamara kind of came out, even though he had some injuries, him and Jamal Williams were out. He kind of even came out and said, look, I'm not saying anything, but some guys have got to be responsible for their own jobs and do those when we prepare during the week. Olave, Michael Thomas has never been a team guy, even though he set records catching, he's slowing down. So I just don't see them getting a lot better. And maybe it's in the play calling of the preparation on offense. If Dennis Allen was doing that and was an offensive coach, they might have been better off.
Chris, you called C.J. Stroud's coming out party in Jacksonville. If there was anything in that game that impressed you or your takeaway, and then you had him again against the Saints, what your assessment of him so far through the first 7 weeks of the season?
Yeah, and you're spot on with this. I've actually called a couple of his games, and actually called one of Richardson's first games and also Bryce Young's first game, and he's clearly, and now the numbers show, but you can see right away he's the best of the bunch, you know, early in the reading of their careers. I liked that he was really confident but really humble, so that's kind of the overview. And then physically, you know, I saw him in college, but I was impressed. The variation of throws, he could do a little soft touch, he could heave it deep to a speedy receiver, and the fact that when we had him early, his offensive line was beat up and there was no running game. I mean, he was barely surviving back there, obviously protecting the football. He had that string before the one interception, and he had a few fumbles, but he's gotten better at that. And I've seen some dramatic improvement just in like the six games of his career. He's got Tank Dell, an excellent receiver who should be back, and they'll hook up a lot more. And Nico Collins, their run game, if that gets going, then that'll help him out a lot more. But even when he didn't have that, even when he had to throw as often as he did for a rookie in the NFL, I've been very, very impressed. I see him even getting better through the course of the season. And physically, he's strong and tough. Doesn't like to run a lot, but if he needs to, he will. And that's why I think he'll have a long and very successful career.
Chris, admittedly selfish question to end on. When you've covered the Lions, what have been your takeaways of Dan Campbell?
Oh, I'm overwhelmed. You sit and you talk to him, whether the mics are on or off or in a production meeting or after practice. You just want to play for the guy. You believe him, even if he says some silly, you know, meathead kind of quote about whether it's kneecaps or fighting to the end or some military expression. And they brought the best out of Jared Goff. I like his team. Watch this week. I know it was embarrassing last week. They bounced back well, had their game last year when they were on their way to the playoffs at Carolina. They got blown out. They came back the following week with really nothing on the line and beat the Packers at Lambeau Field. Well, they had a chance, I guess, maybe to still do something, but they're a good bounce back team. So I this is a playoff team. They should win that division. And then it's how do they measure up against the 49ers or Eagles. But I'm a believer in Campbell. They've supported him, and this is the year. You know, you talk about giving a coach time. He's got the players. I'm a little worried about his defensive coordinator. Dan may have to step in and do some work there to keep them on the right track, but they'll be just fine.
Patrick, I could listen to Chris read a phone book.
I was just thinking the same thing. It's like, you know, sometimes we talk about people that are known for their first name. When you just hear a person talk and you know immediately who it is, that's pretty good, Chris.
Well, a funny story because, yeah, by the way, a book's coming out about Up Close and about some of the things I covered next year, and I'll make sure we get on to talk about it. But when I was a kid, I had two brothers. I slept under an air conditioning vent, and they were like, you always like it too cold in our room. We had to share the room. But when I'd wake up in the second, third grade with kind of a post-nasal drip that affected my throat, and they thought I was getting a sore throat, and I didn't know this at the time, and it's not scientifically proven, but it actually deepened my voice at a very young age. So I never thought of it that way until people started commenting about it. But it's very nice of you to say, because I can't sing worth a darn, but I certainly love talking.
You can find me sleeping under an air conditioner tonight. Chris, thank you so much.
Your voice is fine. Don't worry. I'm a radio geek. I listen to voices I hear a commercial and say, hey, that's Richard Trifus doing the voiceover, or that's this guy or that guy. I have an ear for that kind of a stuff. So your voice is fine. I think you and them all are good. You're in the right profession.
You're the best, Chris. We'll talk about the book when it comes out as well. Chris Myers, thank you so much. We're back. Will Levis may be in for the Titans.